Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Give our friends over at Locked On Bears a subscribe, too, as well as a like on Facebook and Twitter. So we've got a special guest. This is the first time, actually, that me and Matt have had a guest on our show. So if you were from the Debatables, transitioned over to Locked On Bulls, or this is the first time you're really hearing of us, it's actually our very first interview. So we're excited. We've got Stefan Ngo from The Athletic, covers the Bulls for The Athletic Chicago, here to talk about the Bulls with us, as well as my co-host, Matt Peck. What's up, guys? How are you?
Welcome to the show, Stefan. Glad to have you on board. And just a reminder to all of our Locked On Bulls listeners, if you aren't following Stefan on Twitter, you should be. You can follow him on Twitter at Steph No, that's S-T-E-P-H-N-O-H. A lot of great video content as well. As one video you put up in particular, Stefan, again, I can't remember if it was against the Warriors or against the Heat this weekend, but it was the Bulls offense, you know, coming up in transition, and rookie power forward Lauri Markkanen has himself a mismatch, a tasty looking mismatch down low in the post. And instead of recognizing that mismatch, Justin Holiday, who has seen some pretty awful shooting woes thus far to start this season, just chucks up a brick from behind the 3-point line. To that end, do you think that the Bulls should be trying to find, you know, Hoiberg said, well, yeah, we need to find Markkanen more looks. We need to find him all over the floor. Right now, he seems to be mostly a 3-point specialist. Do you think the Bulls should be doing more to get Markkanen the ball down low in the post?
Yeah, I mean, every single game, they're basically missing him when teams switch their guards onto him. Other teams are able to basically do that without any sort of repercussion because the Bulls guards have really struggled in making those lob passes over the top or just getting him the ball on the block in general. So that clip I tweeted out, that was from the Heat game last night. That's certainly not an anomaly. And he only took 10 shots in that game. Justin Holiday took 14. Jaren Grant took 16. Denzel Valentine took 12. So, I mean, like, he's so very clearly the most talented offensive player on the team. And I definitely think that he should be leading the team in shots on a nightly basis.
That's what I got to try to understand here. So is it not clear to Justin Holiday that as much as he wants to be the guy, be that guy, and be the guy that can score at pretty much anywhere on the floor, he wants to be the guy that's going to be the points leader for the Bulls. At what point do you sit him down, sit Chris Dunn down, sit Jaren Grant, and guys, stop playing isolation ball and pick your head up and look for Lauri Markkanen, and he's clearly the best shooter the Bulls have right now. At what point are they going to come to a realization that they need to start looking for the guy that's the best shooter on the floor rather than trying to make their own shot out of nothing?
I mean, it's really tough to do that just because this team is, what, like 3-15, 3-16 right now. You know, these guys are trying to put up good numbers, get on that next contract, you know, get playing time by putting up a lot of points. And it's really tough. I think Markkanen is playing the right way. You know, he's making the right passes. But like Holiday, I mean, he's shooting like sub 40% from the field this year. And yeah, they really have not done a good job at all of getting Markkanen the ball in spots where he can really do some damage.
So what'd you take away from the ass beating that the Bulls got against the Warriors on Friday? Because we talked about it on Monday's episode. If you're listening to this now, you should check back to Monday's episode. But we spent a legitimate amount of time talking about things that surrounded the Bulls in terms of where they are in a snapshot comparison to the Warriors, who were sitting two of their stars, and the Bulls still getting served up a 49-point loss. Everything that surrounded that game, and the fact that Jordan Bell came out and played as well as he did, and Steve Kerr pulled the ultimate petty, ultimate troll move in letting Jordan Bell start against the Bulls. What did you take away from that game? What was your biggest takeaway from it, or even from this weekend and in both losses?
There really wasn't that much to take away from that Warriors game. It was pretty ugly. I mean, the Bulls kept it close in the first quarter, but Steph Curry outscored the entire team in the second quarter, and that's really when the game got away from them. I mean, you look at those two teams, the Warriors are going to be, it's a kind of an unfair comparison because the Warriors are going to end up being one of the greatest, if not the greatest team in NBA history. But the Bulls are just so, so far away from where they are. I mean, Markkanen is awesome, great player, but like where would he be on that Warriors team? He might be like the fifth best guy on that team. So, yeah, the Bulls are definitely going to have to pick up some more pieces here in the next couple of years, hopefully through some high lottery picks to actually build a legitimate contender.
You mentioned there really weren't many, tangible takeaways from that Bulls-Warriors game, and it wasn't pretty. But to your credit, Stefan, if you aren't out there subscribed to The Athletic, I don't know what you're doing, because you can catch Stefan and all their great Bulls content. You do all of us a wonderful service, which is providing those who don't have the stomach to watch Bulls games with the highlights, if you will, trying to find some positives in lots of Bulls losses, and there have been plenty of them recently. And an interesting one I noted was you talking about Denzel Valentine and the development that he has started to show. With he's coming off of a strong week and career highs with 13 rebounds and 7 assists, and their loss to Miami, one of the lone bright spots in that game. A lot of Bulls fans, I think, were frustrated with Denzel's rookie season, kind of unsure of his NBA ceiling, and it seems like there's been a very low floor thus far. Seems to have kind of found a niche as a spot-up three-point shooter, but you talk a little bit about his sort of increased ability as a playmaker. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, he had 7 assists against the Heat, led the team in that department, and in his rookie year, like, he came into the NBA out of Michigan State as a really high assist guy. I think he averaged 8 assists in college. But he was like trying to make, what Hoiberg said is he's trying to make these home run plays far too often rather than just making the simple pass. And I think he has tried to calm down a little bit more in the second year. And you can see his assist numbers really starting to skyrocket in the past couple of games. So I think he definitely is getting more comfortable on the court. And he does have really nice court vision. He just, I think Chris Dunn falls victim to this as well. I mean, both those guys, when they try to do too much, they really get exposed, and they can just keep things simple. I think they can really contribute out there.
With that, I have to ask you about Cristiano Felicio. So we've pretty much not talked about the fact that he's been pretty much a ghost of himself since he got that contract in this season alone. Is it fair, just looking at his numbers, and I pulled up his numbers from last season and in two-man rotations and guys that he was playing with on the floor, and at first I thought maybe it was Rajon Rondo. Maybe Rajon Rondo had a lot to do with Cristiano Felicio's success last year. And then I looked at their plus-minus together on the floor and their pace and some of the other things, and it wasn't Rajon Rondo. Rather, the person that Cristiano Felicio was playing the best with in terms of analytical numbers was Nico Mirotic. So do you think that Felicio's downfall this season can be attributed to missing guys like Nico Mirotic on the floor?
I'm actually surprised it wasn't Wade. Felicio and Wade had really great chemistry last year. And like the way that he's going to get his offense is going to be on these hard rim rolls and lob him the ball and he can finish up there. Bulls haven't really done that at all. So I think that's part of the problem. But also he has to take responsibility for how poorly he has played. His shooting percentages are down across the board, and he looks a little bit slower out there too. I mean, the reason why he is such a unique player is because of his feet. He has that soccer background, and he can really get out there to switch on to guards and pick and roll, and he has gotten burned a lot out there in the perimeter, and that really is more concerning to me than the shooting stuff.
Chris Dunn, you mentioned him briefly Stefan, I am at a loss. I feel like we all were in agreement, those of us watching these rebuilding Bulls thus far through, you know, 20 games or so this season, that Chris Dunn obviously has the long trajectory, higher potential, and higher upside than Jaren Grant. We all know what Jaren Grant is at this point. Dunn has now taken over as the starting point guard, and it's been a bag of mixed results. And really, the loss to Miami was one of the worst games we've seen from Dunn. He actually just got sat by Hoiberg for the final, you know, almost the entirety of the second half. I think the final 18 minutes or so, he didn't play. You also noted in your column recapping the Bulls' week that he actually had a negative assist-to-turnover ratio that last week. And that's been really his biggest problem, is taking care of the basketball. I mean, what can Fred Hoiberg do? This young point guard who was supposed to be a big, exciting piece of the Jimmy Butler trade, supposed to win the starting point guard job. He kind of has won the job over Grant, but here we see in Sunday's loss to Miami, Grant plays vastly better than Dunn. And it's just like a seesaw of two bad point guards.
Well, this is kind of interesting. Like, I'm playing the role of optimist here. Usually I get criticized for being way too pessimistic, but I think you're being a little bit too hard on Dunn here. Yes, he has been really bad since he got that starting role, but you have to be really patient with this guy. I mean, when you look at his rookie year with the Timberwolves, I know there's this narrative that he was bad because Tibbs didn't play him. I don't think that's true at all. He was like top 10 in minutes played for rookies. He just didn't play because he was awful. So when you look at his production this year, he has improved in a lot of different areas. He still turns the ball over way too much, and that's something he did as a rookie. That's something he did in college and in high school. So that's not just going to go away overnight. I mean, you just have to let him play, learn from his mistakes, and expect like very steady incremental growth. And if he can just get better and better every week, then that's all you can really ask for from this guy.
Something positive to note about Chris Dunn too, and take it for whatever you want to take it with, but Chris Dunn in 78 games last year only scored 10.7 times, and in his first 10 games he scored 10 plus points in 7 of those 10. So that's a little bit encouraging, obviously getting more minutes than he was with the Timberwolves, but certainly encouraging from the offensive standpoint. So to talk about this Bulls team overall, and your outlook, your aspects as far as this team goes, me and Matt had the conversation on Monday. We were talking about this in terms of looking at what the Warriors did against the Bulls without two of their stars. And I brought up the point that maybe, I was a little bit too far-fetched to think that the Bulls dropping in Zach LaVine and a 2018 pick will all of a sudden make them competitive or something that they could get from free agency. I had this thought and this feeling that, wow, this Bulls rebuild might take way longer than I thought. Give me your outlook in terms of where the Bulls could be in the best case scenario coming out of the summer of 2018 in terms of projection of when they're going to be competitive again. And at that point, when are they going to be competitive enough to say, all right, this could be potentially championships? And is it longer than we think, or is it shorter than in terms of what you think?
Well, it all depends on what they want to do. I mean, if they want to do this extremely accelerated rebuild, they could open up to $50 million in cap space next summer. And they could go out and sign some guys. The free agent class is not really that strong, but a lot of teams don't have money, so they're not really competing against anyone. They obviously need to shore up their point guard depth. And Isaiah Thomas is pretty much the only above average quality starter on the market. They could probably get him pretty easily, given that, you know, he has these hip problems and he's already a little bit past his prime. So he's going to be probably commanding like a multi-year deal and be a bad contract towards the end of that. So if they go that route, yeah, I mean, they could compete for an eighth seed as early as next year. Now they're going to be in big trouble in the next couple of years if they pursue that route. And a better route would be, you know, taking this 2018 pick, getting one of these five stud freshmen, four studs, and Luka Doncic, who's 18, and building around that team. But when they bring in that pick, if you look at the way that these young players perform, these 18 and 19 year olds, I mean, they're almost never positive contributors to their team. So they're still going to be bad for a couple years. I think that's what people need to realize, is it's going to take a couple years in the lottery for this team to get good. But if the fans are patient and if the Bulls do hit on a couple of these picks, you look at what the Sixers are doing right now with this amazing core of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and a couple other guys there too. If Markel Fultz ever develops, then you know that could easily be a championship contender.
As we're talking with Stefan Noe, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic, you should follow him on Twitter at Stefan Noe. We just got a little bit of your glimpse into what you think, what you see for this Bulls rebuild long term, but short term, and I know some Bulls fans are worried about, well, you know, if they bring LaVine into this, you know, does that accidentally turn into more wins than we want? Because as of right now, the Bulls are succeeding in the tankathon with just 3 wins. They have the worst record in the NBA right now. But let's talk about when LaVine is cleared, because it sounds like his return is not too long in the distance. I mean, we're sitting here on November 27th, 28th, and we could see LaVine in mid-December. What if you're Fred Hoiberg, Steph? What do you do when it comes to the rotation? Because obviously you want to get LaVine in. You might want to ease him in as far as his minutes per game, but he's going to start. You have a huge disappointment in Paul Zipser. You have David Nwaba, who looked strong in a lot of games that he played before he had that severe ankle sprain. He could be coming back. In his absence, Antonio Blakeney came out of nowhere on his two-way contract after shining in the G League and has put forth some solid performances off the bench. What do you do with this rotation?
Oh, well, you have to play LaVine a ton of minutes. I mean, the Bulls are going to have to make a really big decision on him. He's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of the year, so he is going to command a huge salary. And the Bulls should be using the rest of this season as an evaluation period to see if he is worth that money. I mean, they've already said that they're going to match whatever offer other teams give him, but you still need to figure out what you are getting from him, because he's going to be around the team for the next 5 years, okay? And like, he is going to be taking up a huge chunk of their salary cap. So he's just going to be so vital to how they build their roster for this next contending window, and they absolutely cannot afford to screw that up.
With that too, and it's like another aspect to thinking about potentially your future in terms of not only the play on the floor, but also your culture around the team. And it's funny and laughable to talk about the word culture with the Bulls just because of everything that's happened, even just in the last few months. I think Zach LaVine, given if he does come back onto the courts and plays and performs to the projection that we're all hoping he will be, his aspect of his personality, too, and the fact that he's come out to the Bulls media and to basically to Chicago and said, I want to be here. And like, he's pointed all signs point to he wants to take over and be the face of this franchise. And I think that's another factor that I think a lot of Bulls fans forget about or don't really pay a whole lot of attention to. But I feel like a guy that's going to come in and have an impact positively on your culture or your locker room could do wonders, not only for the players that are on the roster, but for Fred Hoiberg, too. I think the Bulls desperately are looking for a guy like that. Yeah, Robin Lopez is that guy. He's that veteran presence, that leadership portion. But you also need a young guy that's going to be running with this team in 5 years. So do you think that aspect of LaVine, not only just his game, but his personality and everything that he can do off the court for the Bulls is part of the reason why the Bulls need to really stick with him in terms of longevity as far as being a Bull?
That's a really interesting question, and one that I think has not been discussed that much. So LaVine is a very charming person, like a really good guy. I was at Summer League this year in Vegas where he was still injured, but he attended just to support the young players. And he came around and introduced himself to all the reporters, tried to learn a little bit about us. And that's something that you don't really see typically from an NBA player, and especially not an NBA star. So I think he's very humble. I also know that anytime Tom Thibodeau was asked about LaVine, he always raves about this guy, his work ethic, how pleasant he is to be around, and his teammates too, and all the fans in Minnesota, they really enjoyed him and really miss him. So I think he also really gets along well with his Bulls teammates. When you look on the bench during these games and they're getting crushed, if the score is they're down by a lot, they have a positive play, LaVine is always like the first guy off the bench that's clapping and meeting the guys after timeouts. So that kind of stuff does have value, especially in a rebuild where you're trying to establish this culture. And I think you're absolutely right that you know, that's really going to help this team down the line.
You talk about Bulls players really taking a liking to LaVine for the fact that he's around. He wants to be around even before he's been cleared. And now that he has returned to some practice activities and his return is not too far off, people, his Bulls teammates are very excited about that. I mean, we got to talk about perhaps the least popular guy in the Bulls locker room right now. That's Niko Mirotić. It's funny that the guy who threw the punch is more popular in the locker room than the guy who took the punch. And people are sympathizing with Niko and are sympathizing with Bobby, and Bobby's teammates were thrilled to get him back after his 8-game suspension. Stefan, what do you make of this whole situation? Jordan and I were talking about it in a recent episode, and I think Jordan and I are in agreement that neither of us see how this goes forward. They keep talking about, well, you know, time heals all wounds, and hopefully eventually, you know, Niko, he's back as of Monday, he's back at practice. He still isn't talking to Bobby Portis, but hopefully this will all just fix itself. Jordan and I don't really see how this fixes itself. I don't think we see Niko and Bobby playing on the same team when this season is all said and done. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. I don't really see how these guys can play together. And Hoiberg said today that they're going to be practicing against each other, which I just can't imagine like how that would possibly work.
Yeah, that's a good idea, right?
Yeah. But I mean, you said that like Mirotić is the most hated guy on the team. I don't necessarily agree with that sentiment. Like, I'm not in the locker room every single day like some of the other beat reporters. But from the interactions that I've seen, like, he definitely does have guys that he is very close with on the team. And then it's just like any other environment. Like, Portis is going to have his guys who he really likes. And there are some people who have Mirotić's back here. So I think that's really bad, though, like, for the team, obviously, when there is going to be a division. As much as the Bulls claim there is not one, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that this is like the elephant in the room whenever these two guys are together. And it's just, it's such an ugly situation that they really do, as you said, they need to trade one of these guys.
Which, speaking of that, yeah, I was going to say, like, let's talk about that, because both of these guys have a pretty low trade market value at this point. I mean, what do you see there? I think, you know, a lot of Bulls fans are also kind of looking over in Philly and seeing what's going on with, you know, the most recent words we've heard from Jahlil Okafor, and
God,
there's that
no,
Chicago
please,
connection
no.
with him, and everybody's saying, please, God, no. I mean, when it comes to trading Niko or Bobby, like, Stefan, what do you see happen?
I think they're going to move Mirotić. So they have to wait until January 15th just because of the language of his contract.
Right.
So I think once that date rolls around, they're going to look for basically any way to unload him and spin it as some sort of positive, no matter what the return is.
Talking about value that the Bulls can get from players, and there's been, I don't know, I haven't seen a whole lot of it, but what in terms of value do the Bulls have right now in terms of acquiring assets to make them better, maybe more advantageous for free agency, make it more advantageous for the draft? Specifically talking about like Robin Lopez, for one. Obviously, that's like the biggest asset that the Bulls have right now. So in terms of value, what do you think that the Bulls can get for Robin Lopez? And do you feel like the Bulls front office feels like they want to trade him and are going to trade them? What is your kind of perspective on Robin Lopez and like what in terms of his future with the Bulls and potentially what they could get for him coming up to February?
You know, Lopez has been a total rock for this team. He's been a lot more verbal in his leadership and communication, and I think he's doing a really great job of mentoring the young players. But that stuff isn't going to be valuable on whatever contending team is looking to trade for him. And there really aren't a lot of teams that need a traditional center like him. So I don't really think that the market is very high for him. I think they could maybe get like a second round pick or maybe like a very highly protected first rounder. But I don't even think that he is the best asset that the Bulls have to offer. And the best asset they have is cap space. They're still under the salary floor. They still have, I think it's roughly around $15 million off the top of my head that they could absorb in bad contracts. And the only reason they're not doing it is because they're cheap. Like, they have this space. You know, they have to get to the floor anyway, but they just won't take on these bad deals to get future first round picks. And that's really what they need to do.
And that's funny because Gar continues to harp on that as a thing that the Bulls have working in their advantage, is that, yeah, maybe the Wade and Rondo contracts were not a great idea, but Paxton and Gar keep constantly saying, hey, yeah, they were short term. You know, we don't have any long term committed money right now. And Gar kept using that phrase, cap flexibility, cap flexibility.
And really, we've kept our flexibility long term.
And Stefan, you mentioned the fact that, well, maybe they can use some of that to take on a bad contract and get an enticing, you know, add on with it. AKA a draft pick or a, you know, young player that might be worth developing. You look across the league, and if the Bulls do actually follow through on their, well, we can use cap flexibility in a lot of different ways. Gar even cited taking on bad contracts multiple times. If they do pursue that, are there any players on certain teams that jump out to you as guys that might be good targets for the Bulls to get in one of those, we'll take on this bad contract if you give us a draft pick type deals?
Oh, I mean, there, every single team has, you know, a bad contract that they would love to get rid of. I made a list over at The Athletic, and I don't have it in front of me, but I mean, just off the top of my head, you know, the Bucks need to shed some salary for this Jabari Parker extension next year. They could definitely dump someone like Matthew Dellavedova, or who is the other guy? John Henson, they have to get rid of. The Pelicans, they have these two big men, Alexis Ejinsa and Omer Sheik, who they need to get rid of. The Lakers, they are desperately trying to get rid of Luol Deng's contract. I mean, there's just so many different deals that the Bulls could do. That they could make another deal with Thibodeau to pick up Cole Aldridge. The Wolves are desperately trying to get rid of that guy too. So they just need to put some work in here and like get some sort of assets rather than just letting this cap space expire.
With that, I want to touch on a couple different things as we wrap up here. One specifically with rotations and the way that Fred Hoiberg has been playing this team so far. So obviously there's a few guys that are impactful and that are going to impact what the Bulls do in terms of the rest of the season. Once you get guys like David Nwaba and Zach LaVine and who knows, maybe even Nikola Mirotic. My question to you is the rotations that Fred Hoiberg has been using, and I was actually kind of shocked to look at it. In terms of percentage of where guys are playing and what positions they're playing, Lauri Markkanen has been playing 91% at the power forward and only 9% at center in terms of where he's playing in positionally, and which kind of shocked me because I was in the camp of wondering if Fred was going to try to run with a small team. And obviously, Fred probably would like the fact that if Bobby didn't punch Nico out and he would have Nico as axis, but the way that Cristiano Felicio has been playing and how brutally bad he is, and to the point where Fred can't even play him on a nightly basis, do you see at all rotations shifting to where maybe Fred will play around with the idea of putting Bobby and Lauri Markkanen on the floor, trying to run with a little bit of a smaller lineup for a faster paced offense? I know he's let Paul Zipser play in some of those minutes that have been taken away Cristiano Felicio, but do you see that at all in terms of like playing a smaller ball, kind of moving some of these guys around in positions to kind of get a fit, or is it just going to be like, okay, well, he's going to run the same guys out there, no one's really going to shift? Do you see it at all maybe running with a smaller lineup, something like that?
If you're worried about Fred Hoiberg being too rigid with his rotations, I'll tell you right now, that is not something you have to worry about. I mean, like, he changed his starting lineup 100 times last year. We did see some of that Markkanen-Portis pairing when Portis first came back in those first three games, and Hoiberg said he really likes that combination, especially to close games. So I think you're right that that could be pretty interesting to look at. And the Bulls offense, they're dead last in the league by a mile. So any way they can generate some points out there is going to be a good thing.
To quickly wrap up the show, we got to talk about, me and Matt talked about this on Monday's episode and talked about it even on Friday when the Bulls played the Warriors. But I got to get your take on this whole Jordan Bell situation. The trolling that was on Friday that happened, the utter embarrassment for Gar Pax, which they pretty much made a weekend of it, considering James Johnson showed up to the United Center and played out and showed out for Gar Pax on top of Jordan Bell doing this. It was like an ultimate destruction for Gar Pax this weekend. Give me your take on the whole Jordan Bell situation, what you think of it.
Yeah, I listened to what you guys said about it, and I agree that the fans who are mad that Jordan Bell is not on the team, like, that's not really what happens. The Bulls probably wouldn't have drafted him anyway.
Thank you. Thank you. Jesus. It seems like so many Bulls fans are confused about that.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely be mad that they sold the pick, though. It is insane for a rebuilding team to sell picks. I mean, the whole point of rebuilding is to get as many picks as you possibly can. And this is not something new for the Bulls. They consistently trade away all of their second round picks. In fact, they have traded away, I think, like the next 2 years worth of second round picks. Now, they got another one back from that Poindexter trade, but they don't value those picks at all. And that is really the complete antithesis of what smart teams do. Like, the Sixers found some really nice hidden gems with their second rounders and also with undrafted guys. Like, Robert Covington is an awesome player. That guy was undrafted. I think TJ McConnell was a second round pick for them. They had some other guys. Rashawn Holmes, I think, was a second rounder for them. So they have all these guys who are solid rotation players. And like, they don't get those guys unless they trade for a huge surplus of second round picks every year under Sam Hinkie. So I think, like, it's more the process of just selling the pick, and you're already the lowest team in payroll in the league by far. And that $3.5 million, I mean, you can maybe argue that it went towards waiving Rondo or buying out Dwayne Wade, but those should just be operational expenses anyway. Like, this is the third largest market in the NBA. Like, they should be spending money on this team, and for them to try to just get an extra $3.5 million in their pockets, it really is, like, totally unforgivable.
And the fact that they, and that's the biggest thing here, is we were making the argument that they didn't necessarily want Jordan Bell. And if I had to put money on it, and I feel like if a lot of people had to put money on it, if they would have kept that second round pick, they weren't going to take Jordan Bell. And, like, that's the thing that Bulls fans should be so mad at, is that they only had, what, 30, 32 guys on their draft board, and that was it. And they knew that they had a second round pick. My thing, my biggest anger out of all of it is that the same exact night you decide to trade away your franchise player and start this rebuild, you trade away a second round pick. That's the focus. People shouldn't be focused on Jordan Bell specifically. The Warriors got a gem. They got a diamond in the rough, and it's paying off for them. And that's good for the Warriors. And he's in a perfect situation for himself. And I'm still not 100% convinced if the Bulls would have taken Jordan Bell that he would perform at this level. I mean, think about the guys that he's playing behind. He's playing by pretty much a copycat of what he is at this point in Draymond Green. And what better mentor to have than him? And so that's why I'm like, there's a lot of different factors that go into it. And we're not defending Gar Pax for selling the pick at all, because they're complete morons for doing that. But at the same token, it's like, were you really going to give them enough credit as a Bulls fan to think that they were going to draft Jordan Bell? And all signs point to no, they weren't going to do that. So to be angry over Jordan Bell, I think is just, it's kind of gotten overblown. And now that the national media has kind of grasped on it, or national NBA Twitter has grabbed onto it, there's no real coming back for this for Gar Pax.
Yeah, and also just the fact that these second rounders, I mean, they're good second rounders. I think they got Bell with, I think they had the 38th pick or the 36th pick or something like that, like a really early pick in the second round. In the next coming years, when this team is really bad, they're going to have like the 31st or 32nd or 33rd pick in the second round. Those are, like, you can get some really good players with those picks. And the fact that the Bulls have already lost them, it is pretty frustrating for a rebuilding team.
The other stuff that made kind of waves in Chicago among Bulls fans on social media, other than Jordan Bell getting a nice troll job in, is the, I guess I'm putting quotes around the word news when it comes to Derrick Rose and the fact that he's away from the Cavs while he's rehabbing his ankle injury and is mulling his NBA future. I think it's gotten way blown out of proportion. I don't know about you, Stefan, but what are your thoughts on the crazy amount of D Rose related activity among Bulls fans on Twitter? And what are your thoughts on the news that he is, whatever it means to you, considering and mulling over his NBA?
Well, it really is very sad. I mean, Rose is a very complex figure. Obviously, like, you can't gloss over this sexual assault stuff that he was involved in, but it just is going to be one of these huge what if questions if he never got injured. I mean, he was 22 years old when he won that MVP award, and NBA players, they generally peak around 27 or 28. So for him to be that good, that young, I mean, it's just crazy to think about what could have happened if he had stayed totally healthy. So that's really disappointing, just from both from a Chicago Bulls perspective and just a general basketball perspective. I mean, like, we were really robbed of some really great years of basketball.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to make, especially around NBA circles too. It wasn't even just like Bulls fans. It was like people were using this as a chance for like planning your day around. I remember when Derrick Rose was, you know, at his peak, people were planning around, you're planning your day around watching the Bulls because of Derrick Rose. And for a lot of people around the NBA, they did that. And that's another, that's the biggest point that we made, is that, you know, as much as he did things on the court and had special moments, there's, you can't gloss over some of these other issues that he had, and, you know, his relationship with the media and obviously the trial too. But certainly his future is still up in the air, and we'll see what he does do with it. But certainly a lot of what ifs, a lot of reminiscing this weekend. And I'll say this too, anytime you tweet out something about Derrick Rose, especially if you include a video with it, you can guarantee yourself at least 200 likes, because we have adamantly said that, and I have stated this on Twitter too, is that Derrick Rose has the strongest fan base the internet has ever seen. And I don't know if there's going to be another NBA player ever like that, because they're the fans of Derrick Rose are so unique. And this whole situation that he has, his career with Chicago and just his career in general has been so unique. But I mean, he's got the strongest fans on the internet that the internet has really ever seen.
I totally agree with you, which is why I've only said mostly positive things about him when you asked that question.
Smart, covering your tracks.
Yeah, I have enough people tweeting at me negative things, so I'll just try to keep it positive.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our guest, Stephen Noe, at Steph Noe on Twitter. He's a great follow, great Bulls follow. If you missed the games, he's got tons of video from every single game, tons of commentary. Also follow his work over at The Athletic Chicago. He's a Bulls writer and columnist over at The Athletic. Great follow on Twitter, great columnist. Go subscribe to The Athletic today. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Jordan, Matt, and Steph, we are out. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode.